Today, I'm surrounded by colour and life at the Affordable Art Fair in London's Battersea Park. You don't need to be an experienced art collector nor an expert in contemporary art to find a piece to fall in love with here. And I'm meeting up today, I'm sitting here with her, Cynthia Corbett, who's the director of the Cynthia Corbett Gallery. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Oh, hello, gorgeous, gorgeous Josephine. It's a pleasure to see you again.
What a welcome. I'm loving it. So let me just go through all your titles, because you are very important. You have an International Contemporary Art Gallery, which is an annual exhibition in London, Los Angeles and New York and Battersea. You're the founding and board member of the Association of Women Art Dealers. You're a patron of the Royal Academy of Arts, the Tate, the Serpentine Gallery, Whitechapel Art Gallery, Camden Art Centre and the Met Brewer in New York. You also enjoy jazz singing in your spare time. So hi, Cynthia. We're in Battersea. What's so great about this art fair?
Well, I've been doing this art fair for 12 years. So really, when I almost started my gallery. And what's wonderful about this art fair, you can find artwork kind of for any level of art. So it's from the start of like a young collector to maybe someone that has filled most of their walls but just wants to get a special gift. You can also discover young talent here, because everything has to be under £6,000. Everything here is under £6,000, so that's the affordable ceiling,
really,
if you will.
That's, I know that sounds terrible, but that is reasonable.
It is really reasonable. And so for some of our artists, for instance, like Deborah Azapati, Tom Layton.
Yeah, they're very top.
Exactly. So what they do, because they got their start here and they want to maintain having like young collectors know their work, they do special pieces for this fair that are smaller, or maybe from their back catalog,
or what, like a print or something,
a silkscreen print, or maybe a larger edition of a photograph, or a tiny drawing, that sort of thing. But I'm not the only gallery that's doing this. I mean, all the galleries that are seasoned will be having smaller works or special works by their established artists, and then young talent, which I do through my Young Masters program.
Now, we'll come on to that later, which is obviously a very big part of your life, but I want to ask, you live in Wimbledon and you're obviously an American. How did you end up in London?
Well, actually, I ended up in London because I was an international economist, and I was transferred by my bank at the time to London from New York. And I worked on international negotiations with countries' debt problems.
There's a lot of them.
So I think what one interviewer once coined my life as said, you went from emerging markets to emerging artists. And I really, really liked that. So after being here for a while, I met my English husband. We got married and I had a daughter. And really the family sort of demands meant that it was very, very difficult to continue the kind of stressful city job I had. And I'd always loved art. Not to do art, not to make art, but to look at art and study art history. So I went back to Christie's Education in London for 3 years and really learned about art history and how it could change my life, and I could start representing contemporary artists.
Yeah, when did you get the idea? Because obviously art history is ancient art. I mean, old art, you know, I mean, it's the history of art. How did you get the idea? Because your paintings are particularly bright and modern.
Yeah, so what in my case, I loved art history, and I loved kind of the historical, mainly German and French artists. But I knew that I just didn't have the capital to kind of be a modern an old master dealer. So I thought, well, what could I do? So I started to go around to the various art colleges, and I was seeing artists that I just really loved their work. And I thought, well, maybe I can offer to represent some of these artists and try to curate exhibitions, not knowing what I was doing.
Always the best way.
I don't know, but I just did it my way, I guess, as Frank Sinatra would say. And I ran around and found incredible artists, because if you look, you're going to see. And London is just full of this incredible talent and vibrancy, particularly, I'd say, in the visual arts. We are really, really spoiled in London. So some of the artists that I found initially were Andy Burgess, who I'm still working with. I saw he was doing his own pop-up on Cork Street back in 2001. Tom Layton and Clary Rees, I found their work at the graduate programs at the art colleges here. Deborah Azapati found me. And
I'm very interested to know, so how important is the relationship between you and the artist, and what sort of relationship is it?
It's absolutely vital, and the relationship is, maybe it's the last bastion of it, I'm not sure, but it's totally built on trust. And the job of the gallery is really to do the things that maybe the artist finds more difficult, because it's about kind of shouting out and promoting and, you know, being the ultimate Jewish mother, may I say, you know, bragging and really pushing and nurturing and finding ways to promote the artist for their own benefit, for their career. So it's like driving their career. Some artists actually can do that.
Yes.
Some can, but even those that can, they find the admin then on top of that just, you know, soul destroying, because they need to be in the studio, they need to be creating. And a good gallerist will really promote and find, kind of like a good mother, not all children are the same. So you can't treat all artists the same. And I think that's what makes a really special relationship, realizing that each artist is different, each will have, you know, their own particular needs, and each will have a market that is best suited to them. So the gallery needs to really be clever in that way, and then the artist will ultimately be happy and successful and grateful, hopefully. And
so you show all over the world. I'm interested to know the difference between the art buying public in the States and the UK.
I think one of the main differences is that, well, actually, until recently, I would say, Americans have this, you know, on the whole, I mean, it's a generalization, yeah, of course, but they do have a really strong confidence in their opinions. So there's more of an impulse. So if they like something,
they go, oh my God, I've got to have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I've got to have yeah, it. And yeah, and yeah, you know, there's more contemplation here in Britain, because it's an older society, and maybe with frugality that happened, you know, post-war, and you know, that more humility and more reserve. Mm-hmm. But America tends to be faster moving in that regard. And it meant that as soon as I started showing my artists and opening a gallery, I went to America as quickly as I could and did whatever art fairs I applied to and could get into.
Because I find your art is quite, I mean, I know you are American, but I think the taste is quite American. It's big, it's bold, it's colorful, you know, but also it's just quite graphic.
Yeah, I'm sure there is an element to that. I'm an expatriate, aren't I? So I'm an American expatriate that is seeing Europe through different eyes, and I'm bringing an experience back then to America, mm-hmm, that yeah, people can relate to. Yeah. And then here in Britain, I'm bringing things actually to the British audience that is different. And I think that also has made the gallery quite successful.
Now let's talk about your transferable skills, because you were this high flyer in the city. How similar is the art world to the city?
Very different.
Oh, really?
Very, very different.
Gosh.
So, I mean, the skills that are transferable, yeah, I would say, is a lot about being positive, being numerate, having common sense.
Yes.
Really common sense,
yes,
you know, being
especially
practical.
Especially dealing with art.
Yeah, and being practical and knowing how to balance sheet, you know, do the balance sheet,
yeah,
and sort of all that practical side of things, and being able to get along with people. So those are the transferable skills. But the worlds themselves are very, very different. And I have to say, you know, from when I first started and tried to open the gallery, I struggled because I was everything. I had to be the IT guy. I had to be the admin person. I had to be the accountant. And I had to be front of house. I had to be back office. You know,
So you had to learn so much more then.
Yeah.
You weren't just doing one role.
I mean, even like drill, I had to drill into the wall, you know, and things like that. And so I don't think that everyone can be a gallerist, actually, because it really does take left, right brain, takes both to do it in a successful way, because otherwise it can be so hard and so frustrating. And I think
so you can't just be a salesperson.
No, you really can't just be a salesperson. And also, but this is just my take on it, my personal take. I can't sell anything that I don't love myself, passionately believe in. So every single piece of art on my stand today or the artists that are in my stable, I love their work. I would have their work in my home, which I do. And I totally, you know, believe in them. And I don't have to ever worry about quote unquote selling, because I am selling what I love, and my clients, they share my taste. And if they're not my clients, they probably don't share my taste, which is fine as well. But I found that I just couldn't do it any other way.
Now, I'm interested to know, because when I met you first, I came to your house in Wimbledon, and you said, but this is my gallery. I was like, what? But you said you haven't really, apart from your home, you don't have a kind of stable gallery, do you? Can you explain that?
Yeah, so I float around. So in 2004, when I decided to open my gallery, I really wanted to be in central London. So
initially,
yeah, exactly. And then even in 2004,
how much was it?
So expensive. But I thought, you know, if I'm going to attract the kind of clientele I need to, which is very international, sophisticated, people that have, you know, limited time, I need to be in central London. So how am I going to do this? Well, then I thought, well, I have this really interesting place that we live. It's a converted convent. It has a lot of walls, and it's lateral, as opposed to, you know, like long, you know, tall and thin.
Got a lot of steps. Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll try it here, make it HQ, do invitational, do like salons, and then, initially, I was like begging, borrowing, getting offered space. It was before the whole pop-up movement started. So I did. I kind of, in a way,
You were pre-pop-up.
I was pre-pop-up, and
you
invented
it. Maybe.
And I also got some interesting experience in unusual spaces.
Yeah.
So I did all kinds of crazy exhibitions, and people, like one place was called a glass house, which was an eyeglass place. Mm-hmm. I took over literally a disused, abandoned building in Peckham, in Kennington. I did things in restaurants and hotels and people's homes and all over. And then I realized that Cork Street had these two available rental spaces, and then I started bravely putting my hand in my pocket and relying on my overdraft from my bank, and paying for rental space on an ad hoc basis when I had important exhibitions to showcase.
And is that what you still do?
It's exactly what I still do. And it's funny because I didn't know that I was going to 2004 till 2017, that's 13 years. I didn't know. I thought I was going to have to open a permanent space.
Yes, but so that was always the goal. Yeah.
And that was the goal, but then every time I tried, it was either in the wrong location and I could kind of afford it, or it was in the right location and I could not afford it.
Yeah. And then I think something was telling you not to do it.
Yeah. I think so, because I don't think I'd been able to keep operating, because it's the...
Oh, fuck. Carry on. If you're selling the top art, then what happens?
Well, if you're selling the really top art that's highly desirable, you know, you can't guarantee you're going to cover all your costs, but you have a pretty good idea.
Yes, yeah, you know that something's £50,000.
Yeah. If you're selling, you know, say the art, like with Deborah Azapati, she does sell some of her work for £50,000. But that's not the average price of my young artists. No. So you then do a disservice in a way to not only your artists but also your loyal clients. Is if you can't sustain your cost. This is where the economist in me comes back.
She's talking numbers. I'm glazing over now. Okay, right. Now I want to hear about the young masters. You have invented a prize for young artists. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is really, really exciting. And we're actually in the final throes of the call for artists this very month in the very happy International Women's Month. And yesterday was International Women's Day. In 2009, 5 years after I started my gallery, I decided that I wanted to try to do something special between art history, which was my love, and contemporary art, which was my business. So I thought, well, what can I do? Maybe I can start putting together some sort of interesting curatorial projects. But what would differentiate it? Oh, let's do a prize. A few different patrons and clients said, we'll give you some money, so you can do a prize. And that was the brainchild of it. And I had two other curators that were working with me at the time, also women. And we came up with the idea and the name Young Masters. Young meaning alive and contemporary, no age restriction. So young not in the numerical sense, not in the chronological sense. And masters, you know, having like a shorthand to old masters, but again, masters encompassing all the art historical lengths. So we did that in 2009. It was very successful. We had two exhibitions, one in an old master gallery where the artists could have a dialogue with old masters, and then in a Truman Brewery took over a massive space there, and that was successful. And we decided we wanted to do it annually, but we couldn't because
we've got to find the sponsorship.
Yeah,
that's the hard thing, isn't it?
We became very aware.
That way you spend all your time trying to get sponsorship, yes, as opposed to doing your proper job.
And I wanted to. So basically, in 2012, what we did, we decided to run the Young Masters in parallel with my gallery, and we set up a not-for-profit LLP called Young Masters Art.
So what's that like, a charity then?
It's not a charity. We couldn't. We actually, believe it or not, we couldn't afford to set up a charity. It's really expensive. So that could happen, maybe say in. Maybe 5 years we'll be able to afford that, mm-hmm, because it's very, very regulatory.
So how does it work now then?
So what we do now is we run in parallel to the gallery, we run a competition. We had one in 2012, which was a separate entity called Young Masters Art Award, and we did a call for artists, you know, a public call for artists, not just an invitational, and we had a board of patrons and judges that were independent. After 2012, we decided to do it again in 2014. And because the recognition was growing, and because of the nature of it being nonprofit, more and more respected sponsors and judges wanted to be
fabulous,
a part of it.
Fabulous.
And then in 2014, one of my clients said, my wife is a very passionate collector of ceramics. If I give you money, will you do a ceramic prize? So in 2000.
So this is a separate one.
Yeah, so in 2014, we did Young Masters Art Award. Overall, fine art, any genre, and then we did Young Masters Males Grand Ceramic Prize, and this year we're launching a third strand, which is the Young Masters Emerging Women Art Award.
Hey, I like the sound of this one.
And this was also, again, a client said, if I give you money, will you do an Emerging Women Art Award? And I said, yes, with pleasure.
Oh, fabulous. Now, how do people, how do people enter?
So everything is online. It's www.young-masters.co.uk. The deadline for entries is the 31st of March this month. So we still have time. And it's not that hard. It's not that big time-wise. So you have to pay £30. Mm-hmm. If you're in the UK, £30 plus VAT. Internationally, it's just £30. All the information is on the website. You hit apply, and then you do an application, which is you submit up to 6 images that shows, they don't have to be available, but these images must show the real nature of your work as an artist, and then there has to be a statement. Because the statement is extremely important.
Okay.
because the statement, because there's no age restriction, no genre.
Yes, I was going to say, because if it says young, I was thinking, well, I've got a friend that's 60, could she enter?
Absolutely. In 2014, we had a gentleman call me to say, I would really like to enter, but I'm 79.
Oh,
so I said,
sweet.
Are you breathing? He said, yeah, at the moment. I said, you're entering. And he was fine, you know, he was one of the shortlisted artists.
Fabulous.
Red Saunders. He's amazing.
Brilliant.
So that was great. And
so you just go to the website, you apply.
And I would say, but just a hint to, you know, some of the probably the women that are listening to this broadcast, be very clear in the statement why your work is relating to the past, because the main theme and that judges are looking for are links to art historical any culture, art historical, the canon of art history, basically, whatever that might be, whatever culture you might be from.
So
but
could
they
you give
see.
Us an instant then?
Yes. If you, the winner of, for instance, the Young Masters Art Award in 2014 was a British painter named Jürgen Wolf. And it was actually voted unanimously that he won.
Wow.
And was 62. Mm. But the
nice and young.
Yeah, he was nice and young. And he had never shown in London before.
Wow.
So he was actually quite well known in Germany. Mm. But the thing that pushed him over was that his work, it was so obviously inspired by German Expressionism, Neue Sachlichkeit, the sort of German Romanticism, but unmistakably contemporary and unique. It was unique, unique, unique. There was no painter like him. So you could, so that when the judges were looking at his work, they said, it's got to be him. Because you could see all the references, but not in any derivative way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it can't be derivative, because then it was just like a copying thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And his ideas were so formulated, yet so new and so fresh.
Mm.
So that's the kind of thing the judges are looking at, because basically there's only going to probably be maybe 30, I'm not sure how many in total yet, but maybe 30 artists will be shortlisted. And each one has to be very different from each other. Because otherwise, it's not going to, you know, end up being
do
really great
end
for
up
the audience.
Showing,
yeah. So, so basically, the artists, the shortlist will, the deadline is at the end of March, and then the artist will be chosen within about 4 to 6 weeks, and will be invited to do an exhibition at the Duke Street Gallery, 8 Duke Street, in my favorite area, St. James Mayfair, right next door to Christie's. So it's
where all the nice men in bowler hats are. Is that why you go there?
Of course, yes. And I think there's a little bit of nice restaurants and a lot of traffic coming from Christie's. Hopefully that's the plan, because it is a selling exhibition as well.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah,
so they get a chance to sell.
They get a chance to sell. The proceeds go to the artist, any sale proceeds to the artist and the foundation. So, and which is fabulous. And then I would also say that even if you don't get shortlisted, you will then go into our database for all our future projects. Because the only time there's a judging panel and there's an art award is these once every 2 to 3 year art competitions. Otherwise, we're doing exhibitions all the time. And what's going to happen this year, we've been given, I guess because there's a lot of interest in it now, a lot of institutions and public galleries all over Britain are asking us if we would do exhibitions for them in this theme. So we don't have to only have the artists that were shortlisted. We can actually go to our database and say, hey, you're invited to...
Is it that people can relate to a painting more if they can put it into contextual sort of knowledge?
Well, why I wanted to start this and why I think it's really hit a zeitgeist is that when there's a difficult, whether it's economic, political, changes happening...
It's everything at the moment.
Yeah, everything at the moment, and like there have been in other times in history. People like to look at the past. They just do. And it gives them some sort of assurance.
Security, yeah.
And it means that everything can have some relationship. So you know, people in a different way, they can all relate to what we're showing. So it makes it more accessible to people.
Yeah.
And that was one of my aims, is I wanted contemporary art to be at the highest quality and yet be accessible, but and yet be totally unique and original and take advantage of all the amazing technological incredible advances we've had. So one of the chairman of the judging panel is this amazing art historian and just my mentor, Godfrey Barker. And he is just
sounds
so...
Sounds very English.
Oh, he's so English. He's so wonderful. He used to be the chief art critic of the Daily Telegraph. I mean, he's just amazing. But he is so... He's so knowledgeable about art history, and yet he absolutely goes crazy over digital art. Anything, the more advanced, the better, because he says every artist in history were taking advantage of all the new innovations, mm-hmm. because they wouldn't have been at the top of their tree if they didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's, you know, so we particularly are interested in video art, but it has mm-hmm. to be the highest quality. It can't just
so
be...
So could you enter this with video art?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that we have one entrance so far. I saw his work at the London Art Fair and I went mental over it because it was an incredible subject and really well done, but it was also so technically brilliant. And I think that's where we're going with some of these, the more moving images or digital images. You know, you have these people that are coming up with these amazing ideas, but they're technically brilliant. That's what we want to celebrate. And
fantastic. Now we're at the art fair. Let's quickly whiz round and talk about some art.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
How fun.
What do you want to show me first?
I think I should show you, talking about digital art, I think I should show you the latest creation of one of the youngest artists I ever showed originally is Tom Layton. I saw his work before he graduated from the Royal College of Art. He was 20 years old and I was blown away.
Oh, that's young.
I took him to Chicago, Miami, New York, his work, and sold it to...
So is this photography?
So Tom Layton is a...
Can you just describe it?
Is a photographer. Mm. This picture we're looking at is called East Village, and it's basically thousands and thousands of photographs that he has taken himself all over the world and digitally made into one work, and you cannot see any seams. So you're looking at what looks like Times Square, but then you see the Himalayas in the background,
yes.
and you see the Imperial Chinese Pavilion, whatever that's called.
Yeah. Then you see a mountain secret. In the background,
yes.
and then you see different iconic buildings.
You
the
you
world.
See the Gherkin.
Yeah.
In the middle of Times Square, but then this building is from Paris.
Right at the front, yeah.
You know, like juxtaposed. And then you have all these hundreds of people.
So it is an international picture, really,
yeah,
isn't
totally
it?
Totally international.
Yeah.
And he put it in the most cutting-edge light box that is now all of it, one inch depth.
What, because like it's become so good, the lighting.
And the technological
LEDs,
stuff. LED and all the stuff. Because when we first started working on this, he always had an imagination. He wanted to do a light box. Mm-hmm. And I swear it was like a foot deep. You know, it was cumbersome. Yeah. It was horrible. Yeah. So this is just stunning. And he did this special piece for the Affordable Art Fair. So it would be under 6,000. Because again, he got his start here.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Tom Layton. That's so incredible.
Yeah, show us what
And
else.
Then I think we should look at Deborah.
Yeah. Deborah has been on Radio Gorgeous.
Yeah, Deborah Azabadi has been on Radio Gorgeous because she is just an incredible...
She's the artist that does sex, relationships, feelings, bodies, in a sort of pop-arty way.
Yes, and she got her start really by, after she had worked for Disney, IKEA saw her work, and what we're looking at today is a piece called Gossip. And Gossip has a beautiful blonde woman that's so graphically done, and she's into the vintage phone saying, "What did you say?" And this was the piece that launched her publishing, and the publishing launched her career.
I'm getting goosebumps.
I know. So
that.
It's really great, and it's here at the Affordable Art Fair because it's in a special silkscreen edition under 6,000 pounds.
Fabulous. So you get good deals here.
You really do.
Yeah. What else have you got, darling?
And then I want to move in to show some of the young masters,
yes.
including the artist who
so
won.
This is the porcelain.
Yes, this is the one. Matt Smith won the Young Master Ceramic Prize in 2014, and he is basically playing with gender through his ceramics.
They look like, if I saw them, I'd think that they were kind of 18th century ancient beautiful pieces. But then when I look closely, the subjects are quite bizarre.
Yes, he's playing with gender. He calls himself, you know, he experiments with queer art, and he did a whole project at the V&A with Spode, and they disused molds of Spode, and now he's been bought by the V&A. So he is one of the ceramicists that we show as part of Young Masters, and Zemmer Pellid.
Wow, this is incredible. This is textual. It's can you describe it?
Yeah, Zemmer Pellid is a young Israeli female artist who got a full scholarship to the Royal College of Art, and she creates these amorphic pieces. This one is black. It looks like a sea anemone, and it's built with thousands of shards coming out.
What's it made of?
And it's porcelain. It's all porcelain.
I would have said that was black rubber.
Yeah, it looks like black rubber, and it's very fragile. And she is just, she's becoming...
That's incredible. You know, I don't even know how she'd make that.
It's hours. Yeah. Yeah. You know, she has such patience. Mm. And then we're looking at...
These are photographs.
Yeah,
like.
This is Isabel Van Zyl, who is a young... Well, she's in her 30s, Dutch... woman, mother, mm-hmm. single mother, mm-hmm. With two boys, and she is passionate about her career as interpreting beauty and self-portraiture interpreting beauty. And
so that's her. Well, she is beautiful, I must say. She's blonde and beautiful big lips.
Yeah, but and she...
These are black and white, kind of quite fashion-y kind of photos.
Yes, and she's just done a collaboration with Iris von Herpen about women, iconic... historical women, and it's going to be in Mirror magazine, and it's actually on my website, on my Facebook page, on Young Masters.
Great. We're going to stop now because we could go on all day. There's so many amazing things we could see. So if people want to, tell us your website, Cynthia.
So my website is www.cynthiacorbettgallery.com. Everything is there. I have Facebook, I have Instagram.
And can you also tell us just again the Young Masters?
And Young Masters is young-masters.co.uk, and on Facebook it is the Young Masters Art Prize. And Facebook and Instagram. We're very active on all of the social media.
I bet you are. Thank you so much for coming on to RadioGorgeous.com. You've been a star and witty and fabulous as usual, darling.
Oh, thank you so much, Josephine. Thank you.